Another wonderful good morning to all of you. It's good to have some of you back who have been fighting colds and flu, and it's good to see you back on your feet, back with us. So good to have Becky and Debbie with us, and appreciate you being here and worshiping with us. Our theme this year is Be Strong and Courageous. And last week we talked about a lesson of being strong and courageous in our evangelism, in talking to others about Jesus Christ, conversing with them, standing for something in the Word of God, inviting them. This morning we're going to talk about marriage. Because one of the suggestions is that our theme for this year would be about marriage and family. And I like that. And though I didn't go with that theme, I think that it's a good time this year to go back to that subject and to talk about subjects of such as marriage, family, and parenting. Because the family unit God created is the center of the world. It's the center of society. When marriages are weak, families are weak. When families are dysfunctional, then society becomes dysfunctional. And so I thought it would be a good time to talk about one particular subject of marriage, and that is communication. And I thought it would be a good time to talk about it since my wife is out of town, and she can't hold this against me. Don't let her know what I talked about when she gets back. But I wanted to revise and flesh out a little bit a series that I did partially about 2 years ago. I wasn't real pleased with it, and I wanted to go back to it. And a lot of the thoughts, a lot of the ideas come from this book called The Language of Love and Respect by Dr. Emerson Igrix. And so we're going to take a little bit of his thoughts and apply it to what the Bible has to say about how we can improve our marriage by improving our communication. And it doesn't matter who you are or what stage of marriage you are. Maybe you are listening to this. Maybe you are watching this on social media. Maybe you are here, you are thinking about getting married, you are just married. You remember back in those days where a lot of us in that state were a lot younger, a lot that euphoric, joyful stage, such as this young couple of 25 years ago. And I know what you're saying, what a mismatch, I agree. How that goofy-looking guy got that beautiful woman to marry him, I don't know. But maybe you're in that stage, and I know you think that, you know, it's we're going to conquer the world, we're going to have the greatest marriage, and we're not going to fall to the pitfalls of all these other marriages. I know we thought the same thing. But I hope that you'll open yourself up to, from the very start, looking at this series and adapting the things that we talk about, adapting a goal that at the very beginning you're going to work on improving and reminding yourselves the importance of having good communication and some of the challenges that come from communication between a husband and wife. And I think if you can apply those at the very beginning, you're going to do yourself a wonderful service to becoming one flesh with your spouse. But most of us in this series have been married a number of years. And sometimes when you've been married a number of years or a number of decades, things can be taken for granted. And things can kind of lose their luster. And you might get into a marriage that looks a little bit like this couple, where they're kind of taking each one for granted, and they've just kind of lost that whole loving feeling, and they're just kind of bored with one another. One of the series, or one of the lessons I often do about marriage is what this husband and wife have fallen to, and that is called the sin of staying together. And very quickly, what that means is that some Christians get into a very culpable state, meaning we just find a common ground and that we're just going to, you know, the Bible says not to divorce, so we're not going to divorce, but we're going to be two individuals living under the same roof. And that is just as much of a sin as breaking up that marriage, in the idea that God intended marriage not to be two individuals living under the same roof. God intended marriage to be so much more. Just read Ephesians chapter 5, as we will a little bit later. Husbands, love your wives. Wives, be subject to your husbands. All couched in the terms of Christ and His love for the church, and vice versa. And so one of the things that happens in marriage, especially if we've been married a while, is we start taking things for granted. We get into a position of comfortability. Not that that position of comfortability is exactly what God wants out of marriage. And if we're in that state, veterans of marriage, the only thing I can see what you have to be willing to do is just to put on the brakes and say, we've got to start all over and start working through this to improve our marriage. And one of these things is, of course, improving our communication in marriage. Let's go back to where this all began, back at Genesis chapter 2 and in verse 24, which is just amazing to me. This is where God creates marriage between the very first man, the very first woman. But in reading this, you can see this is not just for Adam and Eve. In fact, it goes beyond Adam and Eve, where God, in one sentence, in one verse, creates marriage. For this cause a man shall leave his father and his mother. Adam and Eve did not have a father and mother, unless you want to simply say they had a father, God the Father indeed. But they didn't have an earthly father, earthly mother. And so he says they shall leave father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And that idea of the one flesh is what we just talked about. Marriage is not just two individuals living under the same roof. It is two individuals that have become one flesh. And that is described in Ephesians chapter 5 as well as other passages. But God created marriage in one sentence. And there's a lot to be learned in that one sentence. And there's almost as much to learn as what is not written in that one sentence, God's silence speaking volumes. And one of the amazing things to me is that marriage is still alive and well. Even those who do not acknowledge God want to get married. And though their commitment to one another probably would be less than what God desires of a husband and wife joining their lives together, there still is today commitment between a husband and a wife. There is still this idea of companionship and having certain responsibilities and commitments to one another. And so, as we leave father and mother, and we cleave to one another, and we become one flesh. In that one fleshness, to have that, one of the things that is required is that we learn, as a husband and wife, to communicate within marriage. So what is the biggest challenge in marriage? Well, you know where we're going with this already. You figured it already out. But it's not just experience that tells us that. According to a survey by Focus on the Family and numerous letters received by Dr. Egricks, the biggest challenge in marriage is communication. It's connected in so many different ways in marriage. When that communication breaks down, so much else breaks down. And so it does us a world of good to go back and to recommit ourselves, whether this is something we see is not a problem in marriage, that we've worked on this already, something to just remind ourselves. Maybe something that we need to take out of the closet and get the dust and the cobwebs off and recommit ourselves to taking a fresh look at how we communicate with one another. But there definitely is an importance to this, because there is what I call the snowball effect of marriage, and communication is part of that snowball effect. The idea of something small becoming larger, a smaller problem becoming a larger problem. And so I want to say this about marriage. Marriage is connected to your life, inside and outside. And what I mean by that, marriage is not just something you're part of. It's like Christianity. It is part of who you are. It is part of your life. You are living some alternate life, and then just at home, you're married. No, marriage is something that is connected to your entire life. And so inside the home, it is connected. Your well-being, your happiness, your healthiness is all part of how your marriage is going. But not only that, outside of the home, it is affected. And so marriage is connected to your life. And so we could say a bad marriage equals a tough life. You're going to have a tough time if the marriage is not good. You're going to have a tough time in the home. The arguing, the kids being affected, it's all connected. A bad marriage leads to a tough life at work. There have actually people who have lost their jobs because of poor work performance. And it's all because the marriage, the home life, is not strong. It is not healthy. It is not good. And it's just hard to go to work and to concentrate and to do what you're supposed to do when that part of your life is not going well. It will also affect and make more difficult your friendships. Marriage is connected to all parts of your life, and if it's not good, then it's going to be a tough life. Now, this last one is where oftentimes when things are not well, where we can find support and comfort and help. But even that can be a little tricky. Remember that movie Fireproof, where the marriage was not good between Kirk Cameron and his partner in the movie. Things were not good in that marriage between the husband and wife. And so what happened is that ultimately went out into their other relationships, up to their friendships. But here's the thing. He was receiving advice and support from friends who were in support of God in marriage. His father, his friend at work, they were giving him supportive advice for God and marriage. But she, with her friends, was getting advice against marriage, against being connected with her husband, but more of protecting herself so that she wouldn't be hurt anymore. And so if we're going to seek out some advice or seek out some help, it's important we do that with people that are in support of God and marriage. And so a bad marriage is not just something that happens in the home. It leads to a very difficult, a very tough, a very challenging, maybe even a very destructive life. Along those lines, good communication is key to a good marriage. Good communication is key to a good marriage. And so if the communication is bad, ultimately the marriage is going to suffer. The marriage is going to be bad. Bad communication leads to a bad marriage. But here's the ironic twist. Sometimes it can work this way as well, that a bad marriage leads to bad communication. When something is awry, ultimately what happens is the communication breaks down. So it can be on either side. And so, if the communication is not good, ultimately, it's going to affect the well-being, the healthiness of the marriage. So if that happens, if that's where we're at, what do we have to do to effect change, to make the improvement, to get on the right track? Well, there's another thing that's key to a good marriage, and that is this. Proper attitude is key to marriage. Proper attitude is key to marriage. So bad attitudes equal bad marriages. The husband who has an attitude that, well, she just doesn't respect me anymore, and so I'm just going to kind of go off by myself, and I'm just going to worry about myself, and I'm just going to wait for her to get her act together. That's a bad attitude. Or the wife says, he's just been rude, he mistreats me, he doesn't love me, and so I'm just going to kind of do my own thing, and I'm going to wait for him to get his act together. Bad attitudes equal bad marriages. And a bad marriage is often the result of bad attitudes. But here's the good news. Good communication equals good marriages. Good attitudes equal good marriages. And so if you're there this morning, if you're listening to this and you're saying, yes, the communication is bad, the marriage is struggling, we've got to do something, then the attitude has to be one where we say, okay, let's start over. Let's make a fresh start. Let's start working on this. Let's get good attitudes in the marriage. Let's get good communication so the marriage will improve and be good. You see, sometimes the communication or nothing ever will change if the attitude is not there. And sometimes that's hard because it might be years of frustration and hurt and maybe even abuse. But if a husband and wife are willing to change the attitude and to humble themselves and to say, let's take a fresh start. Let's work on this. Let's be deliberate with how we treat one another. Let's be positive. Then all of this can be good communication and good attitudes equals a good marriage. And as you start applying these things, you'll start to see the attitude is better. The attitude is good. And you'll start to see the marriage change and you'll get excited. And when you become better in your communication, the marriage will get better and you'll get excited. And you'll start to have some of that euphoric, the roses are blooming type of feeling about the marriage again. It will be exciting again to you. But we have to understand some of the keys. And if we're not willing to change those keys that are bad, then the marriage will not change either. One of the things we want to do in this series is take a look at certain what I call marriage moments in the Bible. Unfortunately, the one that we're going to look at today is a kind of an ugly marriage moment. Not one that maybe you've thought of for a long time. Maybe you're not even remembering this. But it deals with a marriage moment between Moses and his wife, Zipporah. Let's take a look, if you would, at Exodus chapter 4, verse 24. Exodus chapter 4. This is where Moses is traveling with Zipporah, the family. They're going back to Egypt to be the deliverer, to talk to Pharaoh. And in Exodus chapter 4 and in verse 24, "Now it came about at the lodging place on the way that the Lord met him, Moses, and sought to put him to death. Then Zipporah took a flint and cut off her son's foreskin and threw it at Moses' feet and said, 'You are indeed a bridegroom of blood to me.' And so he let him alone. And at that time she said, 'You are a bridegroom of blood because of the circumcision.'" Now that's not a great moment in the marriage of Moses and Zipporah, is it? "You are a bridegroom of blood to me." That's kind of ugly. It's kind of an interesting story. Not a whole lot of details. This is what most people believe is happening. That God has decided that Moses, as he goes back, needs to circumcise his son. And that Zipporah, being not a Hebrew but a Midianite, doesn't want to harm her son that way. And she refuses. And Moses doesn't carry it out. And so at some point on the journey, the death sentence comes, and Zipporah is almost forced to do it. She does it, but forcefully. She's not happy. And so she takes the foreskin and declares that Moses is a bridegroom of blood. Well, we're not told exactly what happens next, but in Exodus chapter 18, after Moses is able, through the 10 plagues over the Red Sea, lead Israel by the power of God out of Egypt and to Mount Sinai, Moses' father-in-law comes to meet him. And in verse 2 it says, "Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Moses' wife Zipporah after he had sent her away, and her two sons, of whom one was named Gershom. And Moses said, 'I have been a sojourner in a foreign land.'" And so verse 5, "Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness where he was camped at the Mount of God." And so it says Moses sent her away. And most believe that's probably all the way back to Exodus 4. After this bridegroom of blood comment, that he sent her back home. And he went and did the journey on his own. And so Moses didn't have a supportive wife, a supportive family. All the time where he's dealing with Pharaoh and the 10 plagues and trying to be this great deliverer that God wants him to be, he did that all alone. And sometimes maybe you felt, because of some heated arguments, some rather bad communication, that you're all alone. And that's often what happens when communication breaks down. And so that was one of the ugly marriage moments between Moses and Zipporah. So let's start, as we talk about improving our communication in our marriage. And it's not just marriage. This is something that we could use in all of our relationships. Good communication is a key to all of that. But let's just talk about the basics of communication. Let's go back to the bare-bone basics of communication. Obviously, to communicate, it takes two people fulfilling two roles. Number one, you have a speaker, right? And that speaker is in control. It's more of the dominant role of communication. We might say something, he has the floor, right? So he is the speaker. And then the speaker, in order to be a speaker, needs the other role, and that is the listener. And the listener is more in the submissive role. They have to become this person that will take in what is being said. And so that's a whole different type of role than being that of the speaker. And so even in communication, there is kind of this dominant versus submissive role that we see in Ephesians chapter 5 in the marriage component. Now, the speaker wants to what? Deliver his words. Deliver what? We're going to call it the message to the listener. Now, what happens oftentimes? Where does the message get lost? Where does it get broken? And the communication falls apart. Well, the speaker, that's an important role. That's a role that needs to be taken seriously. I mean, think about the Bible and how many passages there is that talks about the Christian speaking. And let that speech be seasoned with salt. And Jesus talking about how we'll be judged and yet how we'll be justified by the words we speak. It's an important role because you're asking someone to submit and to become a listener and to receive your message. We all have experience. I'm going to call him the chowderhead. The chowderhead that loves to be the speaker, but hates to be the listener. And so he just likes to speak and speak and speak. He loves to be the listener when it's him speaking. He loves to hear him speak. The problem is he doesn't care about the listener. And because he doesn't care about the listener, he's just speaking. He doesn't care if the message is getting across. He's just assuming that it is. And so sometimes communication breaks down because the speaker doesn't really care about the listener. You see, when you care about the listener, then you're going to care about whether the message gets across. You're going to want to make sure that they do listen and that they understand and that they receive it. So sometimes the speaker is the one that breaks it all down. You see, a speaker can't just think of himself. Just like a husband can't just think of himself and bark out orders to his wife. That's not what God had intended. When he said, you're the head of the house, the head of the woman. But sometimes it breaks down on the other side where the listener is listening, but they're not really hearing. The listener doesn't really care about the speaker, right? And it could be for a number of reasons. It could be the speaker's a chowderhead and they're just going to keep talking and talking and talking and they never let you, what, become the speaker. It could be because you're hurt. The speaker has hurt you. And so you don't care to be submissive. You don't care to hear what they have to say. And so, for a number of reasons, but sometimes it's the listener that can break down the communication. And so we need to look at both sides of this in marriage and know, as a speaker, I shouldn't just believe I have the right to be heard, but that I have to care for the listener. In the same regard, the listener needs to have respect for the speaker and prepare themselves to take in that message. And if they don't understand it, to be able to communicate that in a loving way so that the communication doesn't again break down. And so here's the great part of communication is the speaker thinks of the listener, delivers the message, the listener's thinking of the speaker, takes in the message, and then what? It gets reversed. The listener becomes the speaker becomes the listener. And we've all been in great conversations where it goes back and forth. And the message is received, and the message is given, it's received, and back and forth. But we've been in the other way, where the message isn't received. And so, the listener becomes the speaker becomes the listener, but now he doesn't understand what she's saying. And it all breaks down. And sometimes as we've been married a while, again, we kind of take things for granted. And sometimes we just need to get back to the basics. There needs to be love and respect, even in communication. So those are the basics. But when it comes to marriage between a husband and wife, between a male and a female, there's an extra component that puts a challenge on communication and marriage. And I want to close on that this morning. This is something that he talks about in the book. Why does communication break down a lot of times? Well, I'm going to use a lesson that so many of us are very familiar with, very popular book and concept by Gary Chapman called the Five Love Languages. And Gary Chapman says that oftentimes in marriage, the communication of love, okay, we're trying to communicate love, we're trying to show love. The problem in marriage isn't that the husband and wife are not trying to communicate love. They are. The problem is the way they're doing it. He says, oftentimes couples communicate love in their love language. And so you have, let's say, a husband who speaks love in acts of service, but a wife that the loudest communication of love is in receiving of gifts. And so here you have a husband trying to show his wife love, communicate that love by doing all these acts of service, and it's just missing the mark. Because that doesn't communicate love in her love language. That's not the loudest way of speaking. And that she often does the same thing to her husband. She's thinking of him and she's giving him these little gifts. And while I was away from you, I was thinking of you. And he's thinking, well, that's nice, that's great, but acts of service speak more loud to him. And so oftentimes that's what happens even in communication. It's not that we're not trying to communicate. It's that we're missing the mark. And here's the important concept of the language of love and respect. Most women, most of the time, like to speak the language of love. So when you communicate to the wife, she wants that communication to be received, understood, that is a communication of love. She wants to feel love in those words. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25. Isn't that what we should give her anyways? Isn't that what we're commanded to do as a husband to our wife? In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. Verse 28, so husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own body. He who loves his own wife loves himself. Women want that love to be communicated to them. Now, Dr. Emerson, just as a kind of a tool to help us to understand that, says women not only speak the language of love, but they think differently about things. And they talk differently about things. And so you wrap all that up and he says, women speak in pink. That's how he put it. So just understand, your wife is a pink speaker. Now men, one of the most important things is that when people speak to us, they speak with respect. Men want respect in that communication. Now I can tell you for myself, when I feel like someone is being disrespectful as they're speaking, it breaks down the communication. It makes me upset. And I think a lot of men are like that. They don't speak the language of love. They want more of the language of respect. And notice again in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22, isn't it interesting that he doesn't say, wives, love your husbands. He says, wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife. Even in Ephesians, he uses that concept of respect. Bring that respect, that submissiveness to your husband. Now, obviously, in love, Titus chapter 2. But men want to have that respect communicated to them. And not only that, but men think about things differently and communicate about things differently. Dr. Emerson, just to kind of give us something to hold on to, says men speak in blue. And so in marriage, you have a pink communicator speaking to a blue communicator. Here's an example how sometimes it all breaks down. The wife wants her husband to know he has to take the kids to the ballpark Tuesday night at 6 o'clock. But how does a wife communicate that to her husband? The pink-speaking wife says this and this and ballpark and this and Tuesday night and this, 6 o'clock and this and the kids. Women are much more detailed. They want us to bring all these things. They talk about all of these things. That's the pink speaker. Men are the blue speaker. They want to know, Tuesday night, ballpark, 6 o'clock, kids. That's all. Okay, got it. But they have this detail that was given in this, and she said, talked about this, and she talked about that, and he's thinking, well, I can't remember all of that. And so the communication breaks down. And Tuesday night at 6 o'clock, he gets a call on his cell phone, where are you? Where do I need to be? You need to be at the ballpark. Well, did you tell me that? Yes, I told you that. When did you tell me that? Well, she told him that, but in her pink language. And he was expecting her to talk in the blue language. And so as we move forward, think about the challenge of just basic communication when you have someone pink as the speaker and blue as the listener, or vice versa. So in other words, if we don't understand that we communicate and we think about things differently, and the woman wants love in the communication, and the man wants respect in communication, we're going to get into a dangerous, dangerous cycle. And we're going to talk about one of those cycles in our next lesson. But to have good communication, we have to understand who we're communicating with. The speaker has to respect the listener. The listener has to have respect for the speaker. But there has to be an understanding. One's a female, one's a male. God made us different, even in our communication. Take a songbook, if you would. Turn to the Song of Invitation. I want to tell you, God has a love language. Jesus tells us about it in the Gospel of John. If you love me, said Jesus, you will keep my commandments. The problem with a lot of people today, they try to speak, communicate love to Jesus, to God, in their own language. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, I will tell them, I do not know who you are. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. You see, there are people that want to speak love, but not in the language of God. You have that opportunity this morning to tell God that you love Him, to communicate love to Jesus. By what? By your obedience to His plan of salvation. If we can help you do that this morning, won't you let that be known as together we stand, as we sing.